In Kentucky, a small town sheriff murders a judge in his chambers in broad daylight and surrenders on the courthouse steps. And also in Kentucky, the manhunt for an interstate shooter is over after some elderly bounty hunters find the body. And a mass shooting in Alabama is alleged to have been a paid hit. These stories and more coming at you today, Tuesday, September 24th, on Real Life Real Crime Daily. And I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
How are you on this Tuesday, Woody Overton?
I'm doing well. Fall.
It is.
It's finally fall. Yep. Sunday was the first day of fall.
Well, I'll be darned. The temperatures, they didn't cooperate with that.
Well, hopefully.
No one told Mother Nature.
Hopefully it's right around the corner. And hopefully, knock on wood, we'll get out of the storm season without any more storms. But we'll see about that too, right?
Yeah, we will.
But the best time of the year, in my opinion, regardless. And, that's that, right?
That's right.
Well, let's get down to some true crime time for Tuesday.
Well, we got some truly wild news coming out of Kentucky.
Yes. Yeah.
Kentucky, home of Jack Daniels.
Yeah. Tim Couch.
Tim Couch. Woo! We going way back with Tim Couch. Well, on Thursday, September 19th, a shocking event unfolded that has left the community reeling. Mike Steins, the sheriff of Letcher County, Kentucky, I believe is how it's said, is now behind bars after he shot and killed Judge Kevin Mullins inside the judge's chambers. So here's how it went down. Around 3 p.m., Sheriff Steins walks into the courthouse and he asks the staff if he could have a private chat with Judge Mullins. Now, once he got the green light and the judge headed into the inner office and shut the door, something happened. Not long after, witnesses outside heard gunfire. When the sheriff emerged, he had raised his hands in surrender, and he was properly taken into custody by law enforcement that was present at the scene. He now faces first-degree murder charges. Now, in light of that chaos, the Letcher County Central High School goes into lockdown mode for obvious reasons. And the request for that came from the state police, who were responding to what they termed an active shooting situation nearby. Now, thankfully, the school later reassured parents that the kids were safe and that the shooter had been apprehended. But seriously, y'all, who could have imagined that their own sheriff would do something like this? So the coroner confirmed that one person had died, but they held off on naming that victim. Later, the governor, he goes to the social media platform X, and he announced the tragic news about that judge. And to tell you a little bit about Judge Mullins, he had a pretty significant role in that community. He was appointed to the 47th District in 2009. He handled all kinds of cases, including juvenile matters, traffic offenses, and domestic violence issues. He also initiated a program back in 2010 aimed at helping inmates with substance abuse problems. Basically wanted to help them find treatment instead of just being locked up.
Like,
so he was,
drug court.
Yeah, exactly. He was looked at as a very progressive judge. Now, Sheriff Steins, the person who shot and killed him, he was elected in 2018 and then reelected in 2022. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, y'all. When this occurred initially on Thursday, there was no motive. I mean, nobody knew why this happened. Now, rumors right now, and it's important that I preface this with rumors, are flying on the internet.
Right.
But there's some things that are being said by some more credible sources, I guess you could say, than others. And some of the stuff that's coming out is just absolutely crazy. Now, Sheriff Mickey Steins, he's kind of in the center of that storm. Allegations are swirling that one of his deputies was involved in some serious misconduct, specifically that he allegedly sexually abused a woman in the judge's chambers. Now, before the shooting went down, it's reported that Steins and Mullins had some sort of argument. And get this, they even swapped phones before the sheriff shot the judge. I'm not sure what that was all about, but it's certainly a curious detail. And it gets even murkier. The Kentucky State Police, they've confirmed there was an argument before the shots rang out, but they're still piecing together the full story. Now, just a few days prior to that shooting, Sheriff Steins was deposed in a lawsuit filed by two women. One of the plaintiffs claims that a deputy forced her into a sexual situation inside Judge Mullen's chambers for 6 months rather than facing jail time. How about that for us? You know, that in itself is absolutely crazy. The lawsuit also points fingers at Sheriff Steins for supposedly dropping the ball on training and supervising his deputies. The deputy in question, Ben Fields, has already pled guilty to some serious charges, including sexual assault, and is facing a hefty sentence of jail time and probation. So that's confirmed. Now, after the allegations bubbled up, Sheriff Steins fired Fields, who was once thought to be in line to succeed him as the judge's bailiff. Now, this all happened back in 2022 when the lawsuit was filed. Unfortunately, one of the women involved in that case has since passed away, and that led to some of the charges against Fields being dropped. Now, I want to say again, this is speculation. Nothing official has come out regarding the motives. And the Kentucky governor even came out and he urged people to be cautious about jumping to conclusions. He said the investigation is still ongoing and rumors are flying like crazy online. But I promise you, we're going to keep you updated when we get some solid confirmed information. But that is the rumors.
Well, it's crazy. Right. And here's another rumor about it. It was on X from at Nick Sortor, S-O-R-T-O-R. And they came on and they said that that the sheriff naturally killed the judge because the judge, and y'all, this is not me saying it, certainly I don't have any direct knowledge, but they said the sheriff killed the judge because the judge was raping the sheriff's underage daughter. And the local media reports that the sheriff of Letcher County, Kentucky, walked in the judge's chamber. And this, of course, this was on the day this afternoon and shot the judge, exchanged words with him beforehand. Of course, the sheriff's now in custody on first degree murder. And the deceased judge, Kevin Mullins, and the sheriff Steins were very close friends.
Yeah.
Said if the judge didn't rape Sheriff Steins' daughter, as multiple members of the community believe it to be, and they said, I'm calling for the charges to be dropped or the jury to refuse to indict or convict, make the sheriff a free man again. Well, that's not going to happen. But so it's a bunch of craziness. Who knows what really happened? But you know what's really crazy? You know who's responsible for the judge's safety? The sheriff.
Yeah.
And
that's the one that killed him.
I know. Yes. But so yeah, all the courthouse and the jails are the responsibility of the sheriff to man them. And now, of course, the court system has, you know, they have to pay for the courthouse. And the parish or the county has to pay for the jail, but the sheriff has to pay for the people to man them and you know, serve and protect them.
Yeah.
From correctional officers to whatever. And there you go. He went in there and he killed him. So he walks in, the sheriff goes in and kills him and comes out with his hands up to be arrested by his own deputies.
Yeah.
Because there's no other cops in the courthouse.
Right.
That are in charge of security. Crazy ass stories.
Very crazy. And I'll tell you what, one of the biggest stories in the country right now, yeah. And I'll tell you how big it is. I had someone who doesn't really pay attention to true crime, and they asked me yesterday if I had heard that story. And I'm like, have I heard that story?
Yeah.
Crime time. But I mean, they've even followed it, and they don't normally follow true crime. Yeah. So very interesting.
I mean, that's, you know, it's always going to be a news story that grabs them. You know, like last year it was Murdaugh, and then now it's going to be something like this. Whenever it's high profile people, the Scott Peterson case is still doing it after 20-something years. But look, I'm going to tell you about another horrible shooting where multiple people were killed. And two men and a woman were killed at the scene in the 2000 block of Magnolia Avenue in the Five Points South area near the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And a fourth victim died at the University Hospital's corner to the Birmingham Police Department. Police responded to reports of gunfire shortly after 11 p.m., and authorities identified three out of the four of the victims killed by the gunfire. Police said all three died at the scene, and that identified victims as Anitra Holloman, 21, of Bessemer, Alabama, Ty Booker, 27, of Birmingham, Alabama, Carlos McCain, 27, of Birmingham, Alabama, and the fourth victim is an adult male who died at the hospital, and they hadn't released his name yet. But detectives believe the shooting was not random and stemmed from an isolated incident where multiple victims were caught in the crossfire. And y'all check this out. In a press conference Sunday morning, Birmingham Police Chief Scott Thurman said he believes the shooting was a hit and that someone was paid to kill the targeted victim. While he added that the victim is among those who were killed. And police confirmed the weapons used were fully automatic and that more than 100 shell casings were found at the scene, along with numerous other pieces of evidence. They also believe there were several shooters based on the evidence, and they're working to determine who was the target of shooting and, reviewing videos, surveillance and all that stuff. I will say this, all of us as a community owe it to the victims to do everything we can to take these shooters, killers off our street. And that's a quote from Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin. I don't know, bro. Hearts go out to all these innocent people and they're just kids.
Yeah. And it's important to note that was a fully automatic weapon. Fully automatic weapons. So they were, illegal weapons. So, to start with.
And they always come after the weapons, but you know what? These people went there. They were paid to kill somebody and they got the job done, but they killed a bunch of others. 17 people wounded, 4 people dead.
Horrible situation.
Yeah, right by the University of Alabama.
Hope they catch every one of them and they go exactly where they belong.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to get back to Kentucky, right. And we're going to tell you, look, last week I brought you a story of the I-75 shooter. And at that time, they hadn't caught this guy, and they looked and looked and looked and could not find this guy. Now, Kentucky, look, is very mountainous in areas, and there's a national forest right by where he was committing these crimes, and I would imagine it is no fun to have to search an entire national forest looking for somebody. But in an unexpected twist of fate, a couple from Kentucky found themselves on an adventure that put them in the spotlight. Fred and Sheila McCoy, who usually spend their retirement days reminiscing about the infamous Hatfield and McCoy feud through YouTube videos, they decided to trade in their usual content creation for real-life hunting in the woods. Manhunting, that is. Just days after that shooter unleashed chaos on I-75, injuring 5 people, the McCoys, they felt the need and urge, really, to help the community. So the shooter, who was identified as 32-year-old Joseph Couch, he had gone missing. Of course, everybody was worried. They were fearful this guy was still on the road. So this elderly couple, they decide we're going to go look for him. And they did have a reward. They issued a reward for capture. So they became their own bounty hunters, right? They go out there, and Fred said, the more we watched the news and saw the lockdowns and school closings, the more we felt compelled to search to him. Their determination paid off when they stumbled upon what they believed to be Couch's remains. Authorities later confirmed that those were his remains. The Kentucky State Police expressed their gratitude, acknowledging the McCoys for the role, bringing closure to a very tense situation. The couple's discovery not only came from the community and their appreciation for that, but they also got that $25,000 reward.
How much was it? Yeah.
Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear remarked the identifying of the remains would signal an end to the scary chapter for the region. Now, during their quest, the McCoys documented the experience on YouTube, giving viewers a front row seat to their search. In one memorable moment, they noticed vultures circling overhead, and Sheila remarked on an unpleasant smell waving through the air, and she said, "Oh Lord, this is nasty."
Never forget that smell.
Yeah. So the discovery came after they identified themselves to local law enforcement just minutes before finding the remains. Fred said, "We didn't know what we were going to find or if we were going to find him. We could have found him with a gun pointed at us." Despite their adventurous spirit, it wasn't just another day for the couple. Sheila, who was 59, had previously undergone back surgery, and Fred, who was 66, had knee surgery. Hmm. It had been ages since they hiked together, but after a casual date night, they decided it was time to step up and help. So they went out there looking. They eventually found who they were looking for, and what blew my mind was the Kentucky State Police, the FBI, the ATF. Everybody was looking for this guy, and look out, because Sheila and her husband, they said, "We got this." They went out there and they found this sucker.
$25,000, huh?
Yeah.
That's a good payday.
Yeah.
And then went out and did what the others couldn't do.
I wonder if the Kentucky police were kind of pissed that they found him. Yeah. You got to be.
Yeah. We searched there.
Yeah.
They say that somebody must have moved in there after we searched, right?
Yeah, 66-year-old man out there and a 59-year-old woman doing our job and catching this guy. Well, he was dead, but
yeah. For sure. And then take you to Salem, Virginia, not that far from Kentucky. An 18-year-old has been arrested after a crime spree spanning several neighborhoods in Salem. Bradley Poff, 18, of Salem, was arrested late Thursday morning at home on Maple Street. Now, Poff was indicted by a grand jury Friday on robbery, weapons and larceny charges, as well as an abduction and child neglect charges. His crime spree began Wednesday morning when police say he robbed a high school student, and he's being held without jail, bond, y'all, in jail. This was a multi-layered case that was solved by hard work, collaboration, and technology, said the Salem Police Chief Derek Weeks. The men and women of Salem Police Department stayed on the investigation and brought it to a conclusion. I appreciate each one of them and the neighboring jurisdictions that assisted us. But police say Poff covered his head and face in garments and a mask, which police said made it virtually impossible to compile an accurate description that could have helped in his capture. And you know, they said, "We understand there was some frustration in the media and in some circles of the public that gave a description of the suspect was not immediately given. However, the last thing you want to do is provide information that is not only misleading, but also is incorrect. It was a very unusual set of circumstances." But let me tell you what happened real quick. So 7:27 a.m. Wednesday, Salem police received the reports of a stolen car, and police believe the thief drove the car to the Cave Spring area of Roanoke and robbed a high school student before returning to Salem. Shortly before 9 a.m., police received a 911 call about an attempted robbery in a parking lot, and the thief had attempted to steal a female's purse. He then abandoned the stolen car in a parking lot and stole another vehicle. And that vehicle had a young child inside. Soon after leaving the parking lot, the thief abandoned the child about a mile away. And that actually happened to me in a case. I put the dude, carjacked a car at the gas station and had two small kids, and he put them out. Like, one of them was in a stroller. They put them out on the side of the interstate, or on Highway 16. But anyway, back to it. Minutes later, the bad guy led Salem police on a chase that ended back in the vicinity of a mobile home park where the original car was stolen. He then left the vehicle and ran into the woods. And all the Salem City schools were placed in lockdown mode as a cautionary measure. And an hour later, that child was found safe and reunited with his mom. And shortly after 1 p.m., all the Salem City schools except South Salem Elementary were taken off secure mode. And anyway, they got them, y'all. It's fucking crazy. This dude's robbing and stealing and kidnapping by accident, I guess you would call it. But they'd be dealing with him in Virginia.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Horrible situation there. And where I'm going to bring you now is just as bad, if not worse, and that is Utah.
Hey, y'all. Changing my wardrobe from summer to fall? Hey, it's never easy. Luckily, Quince offers timeless and high-quality items I adore, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh and I don't blow my budget. And there's nothing easier than going to Quince and choosing these high-quality items, like cashmere sweaters from $50, pants for every occasion, washable silk tops, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, and I love that. Look, I got the stainless steel Link Apple Watch band for $59.90, and it's heavy duty, it's awesome, and it's like $100 less than I could find anywhere else. And I also got 100% organic cotton fisherman quarter zip up sweater. The color is alabaster. Man, I can't wait to wear that dude out this fall. And Cindy got the Mongolian cashmere boat neck sweater in heather gray. And I'm telling you, these are classic pieces at a fraction of the price. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/RLRC for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/RLRC to get free shipping and 365 day returns. Quince.com/RLRC. You'll thank me later. Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to be curious and empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the 9th grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
And a mother in Utah has made headlines for allowing a registered sex offender to harm her own daughter, a 10-year-old girl, for $20.
That's crazy.
Yep. You heard that right. $20. Chris Seaman, a 36-year-old from Nevada, was arrested after allegedly paying this mother to abuse her daughter. Now, according to reports, this mother, who's still unnamed to protect the victim, had been involved with Seaman for about 5 or 6 years. She supposedly filmed explicit videos of her daughter and sent them over via the messaging app Kick. All of this for $20 cash. Now, just let that sink in for a moment. On September 3rd, the most recent incident occurred in Springville, Utah. Seaman reportedly paid the mother $20 each time he met with the girl. Not only that, but he also handed her a laptop and an extra $125 during their last meetup. That's absolutely sick. Now, Chris Seaman isn't just some random dude off the street, y'all. He's a registered sex offender with a conviction for first-degree forcible assault that dates all the way back to 1993. The authorities caught wind of this situation after receiving a cyber tip. Investigators say that the video sent by the mother depicts her own abuse of her daughter as well. And it's simply hard to imagine that someone could stoop that low, but they can, and they did.
Unreal.
Fast forward to September 6th, and Seaman was apprehended in Mesquite, Nevada. He's now facing a slew of serious charges, including sexual assault on a child and lewdness involving a child. As for the mother, she's been charged with first-degree human trafficking of a child, aggravated sexual exploitation of a minor, and more. And it's safe to say that both of them, to borrow a Woody Overton pun, sugar just turned to shit, right?
No doubt, man. $20 won't even get you two fucking meals at McDonald's.
It's disgusting. Yeah. Honestly, it's a relief that these two individuals have been caught. They deserve every bit of punishment, plus more coming their way. And let's not forget about the little girl, y'all. She's the one who needs the thoughts and prayers right now. I can't imagine the trauma that she's endured for years, and I truly hope that she gets the support that she needs to attempt to heal
after this.
Just disgusting. And that's the ones that
they need to be
you can't
shot.
Do a bad enough thing to.
And put it on video. And $20. I mean, it wouldn't matter if it was $20,000, but it's still horrible, bro. I mean, I don't get it. And, you know, I'm glad they're off the street. And I'm glad that baby girl is going to get help. And I can't stand a fucking pedophile. But, you know, I do like when they catch people on cold cases, Jim Chapman.
Yep.
And let me tell you about this next one. So James Holloman's DNA was matched to fingernail scrapings. Take a guy named James Holloman. His DNA was matched to fingernail scrapings taken from Karen Taylor, as well as to a cigarette and sweatshirt found near her body. Now check this out. More than 3 decades after the young mom, Karen Taylor, was found stabbed to death in her Boston apartment, and this man has finally been charged with murder. James Holloman has been linked to Taylor's death after her body was discovered in 1988, the year I graduated high school and went into the Army, as authorities found a check made out to him near her body. However, police had not been able to tie him to the case forensically until now. After Holloman, 65, spit on the sidewalk outside of his Boston home last year, authorities snatched up the spit.
You
ain't got no more privacy.
Can't
right?
spit anymore. Right? Getting caught.
So they did, and they were able to link his DNA to the 36-year-old cold case. Investigators deemed Holloman's DNA a match to DNA found underneath Taylor's fingernails, which means she fought, and I'm glad for her on that. So she died. Underneath her fingernails at the time of murder, as well to a bloody sweatshirt and cigarette discovered near her body. And with this new forensic evidence, Boston police arrested Holloman, who had no criminal record. and they arrested him just this past Thursday, September 19th. And it's crazy, right?
100%.
Just think about 36 years, this dude. I mean, she was only 25 years old at the time. Her body was discovered after her mama called the apartment, and Taylor's 3-year-old daughter answered the phone, stating her mom was sleeping and she could not wake her up. So the mother went to Taylor's apartment and was unable to get into the building. She went around the back of the building and crawled through a window of her daughter's first floor bedroom, and she discovered her daughter lying face down in a pool of blood. And according to the autopsy, Taylor had been stabbed 15 times throughout her chest, head, and neck.
Oh, my goodness.
36 years. That's 36 Christmases, 36 birthdays, 36 winters, summers, however you want to look at it. This motherfucker walked for 36 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, they had suspect him because she had written a check to him or whatever, but 36 years. Shout out to those guys for getting them.
DNA, man. Right, we talk about it DNA all the time. Right.
That's going to be a great thing to have as a cop now.
Right? Oh, and solving so many of these cold cases.
Right.
Linking people, even when, you know, you may have known somebody did something, but you didn't have proof.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's also an advantage of DNA now, yeah, is that you can link these people.
You get lucky on cases like this because this was before DNA. I think the first one was like 91 or 92, and they had to challenge it in court and
prove
it scientifically viable and all that. But think about this. Think about, it's not, you can't really call it foresight, but them to keep that bloody sweatshirt, that bloody cigarette all these years.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Had the foresight to keep that.
All the cases that aren't solved, even though, like you said, they probably know who did it, and they just can't tie it because nobody ever thought to say those kind of things back then.
Yeah.
There was no use to it. If you didn't have a fingerprint or,
what good's it going to do?
Right.
Well, thankfully, some people did do that. We're going to go to Ohio. And I'm going to tell you just an unbelievable story that'll definitely make you shake your head. A grandmother in Ohio, she was only 43, but she was a grandmother. Huh. Her name is Mia Desiree Harris. Well, she's found herself in a situation that most of us can't fathom. She's admitted to shooting her own 6-month-old granddaughter in the eye.
Oh, Lord.
And believe it or not, the baby somehow pulled through. 6 months old. Now, it all kicked off way back on December 9th of last year when emergency services, they get a frantic 911 call from the baby's mother, who was clearly in a panic, and she's stating, "My baby's been shot." I mean, I can't even imagine that. The dispatcher, trying to get a grip on the situation, was probably just stunned. Thank goodness for first responders. They get there quickly because little Mia was in critical condition after the shot. But here's the silver lining in all of that. She's doing much better now. That's a huge relief. Now, before you think that this is just a one-off incident, hold on. Harris wasn't just aiming for the baby. She reportedly shot at other family members during this chaotic episode. That's right. She was shooting everybody. According to the Butler County Sheriff's Office, she went so far as to break down a locked bedroom door and fire multiple gunshots. And detectives, they start closing in, and witnesses start pointing a finger right in Harris's face, right? She's the shooter. She took off, but she didn't get far. The cops caught her pretty quickly. And when she was finally asked what on earth possessed her to do such a thing, her response was pretty chilling. She said, "That was not my grandbaby.
What?
Sorry, not sorry."
What?
That was her exact quote. Now, that's a level of cold that's pretty hard to wrap your head around.
I hope Ohio has a death penalty.
Yeah. She even claimed her family was plotting to take her money and that she was just defending herself. Now, Sheriff Richard Jones, he didn't hold back when he described the incident. He called it one of the most disgusting, vile criminal acts he's ever witnessed. And honestly, I can't blame him. Shooting a baby is beyond my comprehension and most people who are normal, especially coming from a grandparent.
Right.
And as it stands, Harris is facing some pretty serious time behind bars, up to 15 years. The sentencing is set for October 29th, and we'll keep you updated on what her sentence is.
Unreal.
How about that? And you know, that baby survived. That's the...
That's
the silver lining there.
Yeah, and hopefully she'll heal and be okay, you know. And then these fuckers with the guns, like, she's trying to shoot everybody.
Because they're trying to take her money.
Obviously,
I'm sure that baby was trying to take your money.
And obviously she wasn't a trained professional like cops. You know, you gotta go and qualify, and they teach you all this shit about your weapons. Well, let me tell you about a cop who kind of forgot about his training, so it appears. And then we're going to Florida, and there's a deputy who says he accidentally shot and killed his girlfriend while he was cleaning his gun. So his name was Deputy Leslie Boileau, B-O-I-L-E-A-U. He said, "I know this looks really bad." And that's what he told the cops when they arrived at his home, right?
It looks pretty bad.
And he's a Florida deputy, and he's been charged with manslaughter after he accidentally shot and killed his girlfriend while cleaning his gun. According to a news release from the Ocala Police Department, Boileau, a Marion County Sheriff's deputy, called 911 on the night of Thursday, September 19th, to report that he had accidentally shot his girlfriend. And upon arrival, officers found the victim with a fatal gunshot wound to her forehead. A 9mm handgun was observed on the victim's lap, and a rifle was also present at the scene, right? So, Boileau told officers during the question that the shooting was accidental, expressing that it occurred as he and his girlfriend were handling and dry firing the firearms. Dry firing is shooting a firearm without ammunition in the chamber, naturally, right? Beaulieu said that the two had gotten home from dinner when they opened a package with a gun cleaning supplies and began cleaning them. It just doesn't sound right. And according to an arrest report, Beaulieu stated that during the process, he grabbed the rifle and dry fired at one time. And on the second dry fire attempt, he had forgotten that he placed a loaded magazine into the rifle, which shot one live round in the direction of his girlfriend, ultimately killing her. That's bullshit, right? You got a chamber around. But the deputy said that he and his girlfriend had done similar training and told officers at the scene, "I know this looks really bad. I told her I did not want this to happen." Well, I bet you didn't. The Ocala Police Department said that a search warrant was executed at Beaulieu's residence, corroborating his account with physical evidence found at the scene. And they said, in light of these findings, Leslie Beaulieu has been arrested for manslaughter for his role in the fatal shooting. And the Marion County Sheriff's Office said Beaulieu is being held in the Marion County Jail without bond. And he was immediately terminated from his department where he had served 8 years as a deputy sheriff.
Good.
Yeah, right. So, you know, these things and the new series I'm starting on November 1, the hashtag Justice4, I'm not saying the name yet. Holy fuck, man. And when it's just those two people in the room and it's your word against
right
everything else, evidence wise everything, and you know this motherfucker's full of shit to a certain, come on, man. You shot her directly in the fucking forehead. If you're dry firing a weapon, unless you're racking the rounds and dry firing, which doesn't make any sense. You dry firing a weapon, you dry firing a weapon, but then you forgot that you put the magazine in, then you had the chamber around, and then you do it again and shoot her in the head. I bet you that they were out arguing at dinner or something, right?
Yeah.
And in that case that I'm going to be starting, and we got the videos and I have every fucking thing on it. And it's a horrible, horrible case like this, right? Where that girl can't tell it what happened.
No. And yeah. I can only speak from my experience, but when I'm cleaning a gun, I don't ever point it even in the direction, if somebody else, which normally is just me in a, you know, in my tool shed or something, but if somebody else is there, I'm certainly turning the gun the other direction, the barrel the other direction. And when I clear my gun, you know, I dry fire it three or four times just to make sure nothing got hung up, even with no clip in it or nothing, just to make myself feel better. It's hard to imagine.
First thing I teach everybody about firearms is never point it at anything you don't intend to kill.
Right.
And always treat it like it's loaded. Always act like it's loaded. And then the safety is your finger. Bullet can't be fired if you don't pull the trigger.
Nope.
It just doesn't happen.
But gun don't just go off.
Nope.
Just went off.
And nope, that doesn't happen. There's no accidental shootings. Somebody pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
And you know, anytime I handle cops or even nowadays, anytime I hand a firearm to somebody else, I'm going to drop the magazine, I'm going to clear it, and I'll even leave it where the chamber is open and hand it to them with the barrel pointed out.
Yeah.
You know, that's just common sense.
Right. I remember I had got a shotgun. You know, growing up, I shot a crack barrel.
Right. Yeah, me too.
It loved
that's why I started.
Still have it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
favorite gun, crack barrel 410.
When I got my first shotgun that was a pump, I was messing around and put a shell in, cocked it.
Right.
And then I didn't know how to get it out. So I called my friend and I said, I was freaking out, man, because my dad was going to kill me if he knew I did that. And I said, I got the shell in and I don't know how to get it out. I can't leave it in here. And he had to coach me through how to, you know, get that shell out. I remember I was scared, man.
Yeah. Got to be safe around firearms. They're no more dangerous than a vehicle or a knife.
Yeah, that's right.
If you use them wrong and shit goes wrong.
Well, let's go to the biggest case in the country right now, period. Trending everywhere, on fire, all of that. And that is, of course, Diddy Combs, Sean Diddy Combs.
This story just won't stop, will it?
Well, it will not. And there is much more to come with him. But I'll tell you this. I couldn't believe he hadn't been arrested before now. I covered 11 lawsuits on him. Insanity.
That was on the Exposed. Tell them about that real quick. I know that you've been covering this from the beginning.
The first lawsuit came out.
On your podcast, Exposed, Scandalous Files.
The Elite. And you know, I talk a lot about just elite members of society, and like Diddy.
But it's all the biggest cases and some probably that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few like with doctors and stuff that are out there. Doctors obviously being elite members of society and doing some sick shit.
You find it anywhere you can download a podcast.
Yep. That's right. So we'll tell you the latest scoop on Diddy. He has finally been arrested. And he got arrested just, I believe it was last Thursday. And it was a surprise. They arrested him at a hotel, took him to jail. And when you're Diddy, you're a billionaire, right? There's very few people that have more money than Diddy in the world. So this is no problem to Diddy. You know, he just bails out, right? Wrong. Yeah. You don't bail out, Diddy. No, you don't. So Sean Diddy Combs has been denied bail after he pleaded not guilty to some pretty serious charges related to sex trafficking that all went down in a Manhattan courtroom. Diddy stood in front of the magistrate judge looking to secure his release. Unfortunately for him, the judge decided it wasn't going to happen. Diddy is facing a string of hefty charges, racketeering, sex trafficking by force, even transportation to engage in prostitution. If he gets found guilty, he could be looking at a minimum of 15 years or a maximum of life. I think he's looking at more of the max. The judge laid it out straight. There weren't any conditions that would make her comfortable with granting bail. She pointed out that sex trafficking is often a hidden crime, making it tough to keep tabs on someone like Diddy, even with monitoring services in place. After weighing those options, she felt the evidence against him was just too strong to ignore. Diddy's legal team, though, they're not throwing in the towel. They're gearing up to appeal that decision, which actually they did appeal since I wrote this, and they got denied once again. So the U.S. Attorney's Office, they were all for denying this bail. As a matter of fact, they're the ones that requested it, calling Diddy a potential flight risk. And 100% he is.
Guaranteed that dude's got a stash of money somewhere, and he's got an escape plan.
No doubt about it.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Got it. So on the day of his arraignment, Diddy strolls into the courtroom. He's wearing a casual black t-shirt and khakis. He's not handcuffed or shackled, and he made sure to look around, sizing up the situation. His team had proposed a $50 million bond. Now, he offered that. Yeah. I will give you $50 million, but not only that, he offered to surrender his entire family's passports. That's him, his kids, and his mother.
He get on a fucking boat and buy another passport.
Period. You don't need, yeah, I mean, but the $50 million, you know you got some money. When you can say, look, I'll give you $50 million, because it's got to be cash. Right, it ain't no property.
Right.
So stay tuned, folks. The saga is far from over with this guy, but at least it's starting, and no one's happier than this guy right here to see that, because he's a great A piece of shit.
$50 million. He probably has $200 million hidden. I mean, if I had that kind of money, I was doing nefarious shit, well, I'd have me an escape plan.
Yeah.
Because if one day the long arm of law might get you, right?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, fuck you. I'd be in a country with no extradition and living fat, fat, fat.
Yep. I'd had the glasses with the fake mustache.
Yeah. Well, I'd go buy me a country for that kind of money.
Yeah. No doubt about it. But good to see that he is, it looks like he's done. Yeah. Diddy done.
Yeah.
As they say.
Diddy done. Well, last week I told y'all about the husband who had been raping his wife, had over like 40 guys, and this was in France.
Yeah.
So she thought she had Alzheimer's or dementia because she had these blackout periods.
Right.
And what he was doing was inviting these dudes over. I mean, he was knocking around with whatever kind of drug, and then they would rape her, and then he'd film it. Well, got just a little update on this before we get out of here today. So, you know, Dominique Pellicot has been accused of drugging his wife, Giselle, and inviting dozens of men. I'm going to give you a quick update on it. To rape her between 2011 and 2020. All right. So the one of the dozens of men accused of raping was, because I asked that. I was like, hey, you know, they got this dude for, you know, letting all these people rape his wife.
Sure.
What about the dudes that were doing it?
Right.
I mean, what if they called you over, Jim Chapman, and said, come on, you can get hit. This is, it's a game we're playing, right?
Yeah.
She's going to act like she's asleep. Go ahead and get your business with
right.
her. And so you don't know, right? But I was curious about that. But they said one of the dozens of men accused of raping the woman who was drugged by her husband has told a court he thought he was involved in a game. A man identified only as Lionel, a grocery store worker and a father of three. That was the other thing. They had everything from cops to paramedics to doctors or whatever having sex with this woman or raping her. But anyway, so he's a grocery store worker and a father of three, was the first of the accused to testify in the mass rape trial and admitted to the court in Avion, France, that he had raped Giselle in 2018, but said he had not intended to. This court's a French outlet, France 24, and UK newspaper, y'all. Dominique Pellicot confessed to his crimes earlier this week after being accused of drugging his wife, Giselle, who's 72, over the course of nearly a decade and inviting dozens of men to rape her. And authorities have alleged that Giselle was raped by 83 different men and was assaulted at least 92 times. What? That's crazy. And appearing in a court on Thursday, September 19th, Lionel, the grocery store guy who is 44, claimed that Dominique, 71, told him that his wife liked having sex with other men while sedated. Get the fuck out of here. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
He told the court.
I mean, dude, you would think they want the person to like be involved.
That's what they call a dead horse. But he told the court, well, Dominique, he tells me that he's in a relationship. He makes me a rather unusual proposal to have sex with his wife. He tells me that she'll be asleep. Talks to me about sleeping pills. Tells me that she takes them or that he gives them to her. It's not clear. I'm not asking too many questions. I was convinced it was a game at the time. And there was talk of medical drugs. Sometimes of her taking them and sometimes of him administering them to her, Lionel added. And I never imagined that she might not be part of this game. My greatest error was not to ensure that she was conscious and consenting. What the fuck? So anyway, part of the Times, dude. That paper in France, Lionel told the court he was invited to the couple's home near Avion and had sex with Dominique's wife for 30 minutes upon his instructions. But he claimed when Giselle began to move, Dominique told me to leave the room, and that's when I realized something was wrong. And since I never obtained Miss Pelikoff's consent, I have no choice but to accept the facts, he continued. When I got in my car that day, I didn't say to myself, I'm going to rape this woman. And I'll offer an apology. It's not funny, but it is. But offer an apology to Giselle, Lionel added, I am sorry. I can only imagine the nightmare you lived through, and I am part of this nightmare. On Tuesday, September the 17th, Dominique appeared in the court and said in his first testimony, I am a rapist like the others in this room. And 50 defendants were on trial at one time for rape.
Jesus. You know?
So the 50 defendants at trial, 15 of the 50 defendants at the trial have admitted to rape, while most have just claimed they participated in sexual acts. They all knew. They cannot say to the contrary, Dominique told the court. They all knew her conditions before they came. They knew everything. They can't say otherwise. This is the husband, y'all. Even if it's paradoxical, I never consider my wife as an object. Unfortunately, the videos show the opposite, so he videoed it all. He added that he regrets what he did. And I told you about when it happened. Y'all, the police discovered thousands of photos and recordings on her computer, on his computer in 2020. And it became, because this motherfucker got arrested filming up women's skirts in a grocery store. And so they arrested him. They could do a search warrant and shit, figuring, oh, he's filming it. Might have other victims. And that's when they found all these 83-something people raping his wife. Fucking crazy, huh?
I got no words.
No words. But that was the update on it. I was wondering what they were going to do to all the mother dudes. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't know. She didn't consent. That dude is about to get the hammer up in the France land.
I think so. The French going to get him.
They're going to get him.
So, all right. Any final thoughts?
No. Love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Hopefully it's cooler where you are than it is here and all that good podcaster shit.
That's it. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
We are your host of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.